93.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch, Matt Douglas with you until 6 o'clock tonight. Having some fun here on a Friday, closing out the work week, and we head back to the hotline to bring in a gentleman that joins us every Friday, Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, it is always a pleasure to have you on, and we have a lot to talk about today. AFC-NFC title games, Major League Baseball win totals, and much, much more. But we'll begin on the gridiron by handicapping both title games. Let's begin with the NFC. 49ers taking on the Packers, a Week 12 rematch where the Niners destroyed the Packers. What stood out to you from the get-go about this game, which opened at 7 points?
Man, so many things stand out to me about this game. First and foremost, you mentioned that first meeting between the two teams. Green Bay off of a bye. It was Sunday night football. San Francisco took them to the woodshed and did so as only a 3-point favorite. Now, several weeks later, San Francisco a 7.5-point favorite, opening line of 7. So money has come in on San Francisco here. And quite frankly, as I handicap this matchup, I don't know if this game goes that much differently than the previous one did. San Francisco is the better team. Aaron Rodgers has not had a great season. The biggest thing for Green Bay here is they have to start fast, as they have most of the season. They started fast last week in the first half against Seattle, let the Seahawks back in the game, and almost wound up losing that game. They've got to start real fast here. Otherwise, this thing could become a blowout in short order. And again, with the move from 7 up to 7.5, keep in mind last week when we talked about the Minnesota-San Francisco game, that line opened 6.5 and got bet up to 7. This one opens 7, gets bet up to 7.5. The implication here that Minnesota is a better team than Green Bay, I think a lot of people would agree with that. And we saw what San Francisco did to Minnesota last week.
Could you see this going up any more than 7.5? Could you see this reaching 8 by Sunday?
I think there's a small possibility. I think what you're going to wind up seeing here is that 7.5 is probably going to work, because there are going to be enough public bettors out there that say, I can get Aaron Rodgers plus 7.5 against Jimmy Garoppolo. I've got to take that. So I think there will be enough of a positive Green Bay sentiment out there to keep this one at 7.5. But I think when this thing's all said and done on Sunday, we're going to wonder why this line wasn't a little bit higher.
What about the over? I mean, it's actually gone up to 46.5 from the beginning of the week. What does that tell us about this matchup as well?
It's really interesting because, you know, we talked a lot about this on my show, Bang the Book Radio, here throughout the week. You would think, given the composition of San Francisco, with how good that defense is when it's healthy, a lower scoring game is the type of environment that San Francisco would want and would probably thrive in. But this line goes up from -7 to -7.5, and the total goes up, as you mentioned, 1.5, which that tells me that the smart people out there, the influential people in the betting market, think that San Francisco's offense is going to have really good success in this game. And if that's the case, with the strength of that defense now healthy, another reason why there's a lot of smoke and a lot of fire about why San Francisco is the right side here.
Taking a look at the other side of the ledger on the AFC side of things, the title matchup there, of course, features the Tennessee Titans and the Kansas City Chiefs. Boy, it's fascinating because, you know, you believe that the line here could go up to 8 at Arrowhead. Why do you think it reaches 8 at some point this weekend?
Yeah, I think this is one where, you know, just kind of from hearing some of the opinions of people that I respect out there in the betting market this week, they really like Kansas City. That's also the side that I fall on here. I do like Kansas City in this game as well, even though Tennessee beat Kansas City earlier in the year in Week 10, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute. But I think this one's going to go up because there's a lot of public sentiment right now about Tennessee. You know, you think about March Madness and the NCAA tournament for basketball, everybody wants to believe in that Cinderella story. It gets buzz in the media. Everyone kind of wants to root for the underdog. And Tennessee here so far has knocked off New England. They have knocked off Baltimore. Derrick Henry's been historically good the last 8 or 9 games that he's played. So there's a very positive sentiment out there for Tennessee right now. The problem is, I think the really influential money, the heavier money, going to come in on Kansas City as we get closer to kickoff here. So I think 7.5 winds up being the market-wide number. And if we see a -8 out there, I don't think I would be surprised by it one bit.
Well, you mentioned that we'll come back around to that first meeting between these two back in Week 10. Based on what we saw in the final score of that game, how do you feel about the over in this game, which currently sits at 53?
Yeah, and you think about that first game, too, and this is something I didn't mention with regards to the side, but Kansas City was a five-point favorite in Nashville for that game. You flip home field advantage, Kansas City is minus 11 in this game. If there hadn't been that big adjustment to Tennessee, another reason why I think this line's going to go up. But also in that first meeting, 35-32 final, over 900 yards of offense in that game. Derrick Henry ran for, I think, 190 or so. Kansas City gave up 225 yards on the ground, the most they allowed in any regular season game. But that was Patrick Mahomes' first week back off that knee injury where he was allegedly ahead of schedule in his return. He threw for 446 yards in that game. So I think this one could be a little bit of a track meet as well. I think this total will come back down a little bit, though, because people may view this as an overreaction to last week with Kansas City scoring 51 points on Houston. But I do expect a lot of points here in this game. I expect both offenses to have success. I just think Kansas City's offense has more of it.
Again, we're being joined on the hotline by Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. All right, Adam, we'll transition now into some baseball talk. I actually had the opportunity to listen to about the first 10 minutes of your show earlier today over at Bang the Book Radio, and it was pretty fascinating. You were talking about the effect of this Astros cheating scandal and how that could have a major effect on the win-loss totals for the Astros this year, and we'll dive right into some of these overall Major League Baseball win-loss totals released by some Vegas sports books earlier this week. We'll come around to the Tribe in just a second, but let's stick with the Astros scandal for now. How do you think that affects them from a handicapping perspective?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting because, first of all, judging by the talent level on that team and the prospect levels of those guys coming up, it's not really the team that would need to get a competitive advantage like that because they're a very, very talented ball club. They're still going to be the favorite to win the American League West as long as guys like Altuve and Bregman and some of the others rumored to be involved aren't going to be suspended here, but I mean, that certainly is a possibility at this point in time. But I would also say this. The Astros weren't the only team doing this. You know, the Red Sox, obviously, they've been kind of entangled in this whole scandal. Alex Cora loses his job. They were allegedly doing it during the 2018 playoffs. Some people have kind of rumored that the Yankees were doing this, too. So I sort of wonder how wide-ranging this whole thing is and how many teams will actually get called out for it. As far as the Astros go, you know, they're kind of talking to managerial candidates like a John Gibbons or a Buck Showalter, somebody like that. Those aren't big analytics guys. I think there could be a major disconnect between the organizational philosophy and the stopgap manager that they bring in to sort of try and rebuild their reputation up a little bit. I think that could leak over to the field, in all honesty. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where the Astros win total actually settles a little bit. Of course, they don't have the 1-2 punch of Verlander and Cole. Now it's Verlander and Greinke. They may fall back to the pack a little bit here. Of course, on the other hand, they've got kind of that us against the world mentality now and may be able to rally together from that. So I don't think I'm going to touch too much about the Astros early on in the season until I get an idea of how they play and how the opposition treats them, because we've seen comments from guys like Mike Clevenger that there may be some headhunting going on here early on in the year.
Sure, and I think on that same token about the Astros, you have to imagine they might come back to the pack a little bit as well, simply because that division's gotten better, or at least on paper, that division's made some pretty strong moves. There are some other teams in the West that have really made some pretty interesting offseason acquisitions that could really bring them back to the pack a little bit.
Yeah, there definitely are, and in fact, that's kind of a good segue into one of the season win totals I'm kind of looking at here is the Seattle Mariners under 67.5. I mean, this is a team that started 13-2 last year, went 55-92 after that. You extrapolate that out to the full 162. That's a 61-win pace for them. And you've got the Astros, who are still very good. The A's are a very good team. Again, back-to-back appearances in the wild card game. The Angels add Anthony Rendon to go along with Mike Trout. So Trout finally has some help in that lineup. And you've got a Rangers team that kind of overachieved a little bit. They've got a nice front of the rotation with Kluber, Minor, and Lynn, assuming Kluber comes back okay. So there are four teams that could be pretty decent in the West here. Somebody has to lose. And to me, that would be the Seattle Mariners. So looking at them under their season win total of 67.5 is one of my early thoughts.
I think I know the answer to this next question. Having followed you on Twitter for a while now, by the way, Adam's a terrific follow, so if you get the opportunity, give him a follow at Skating Tripods. There's a story behind that, but we'll save that for a different interview. That's at Skating Tripods. But the Indians' win-loss total, right, Narsha, so the win total is at 86. That's what a lot of the Vegas sports books have them at. That seems pretty low.
It is low. And in fact, you know what's kind of interesting to me when I was looking at those numbers and the numbers that we're referencing from Caesars Sportsbook out in Las Vegas here, they had the Twins about 91, which I also think is too low, and the White Sox at 84.5. And I know the White Sox have had a very nice offseason here. They've got some in-house talent that's kind of growing up a little bit, but I don't think they're ready to take that big of a leap yet. I think this is still a two-horse race between the Twins and the Indians. And you know, one of the things that really drives the betting market is perception. And the optics of this offseason have been so bad for the Indians. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. People call the Corey Kluber trade a salary dump, even though it, maybe to a degree it was. But I think they really wanted to get Emmanuel Class A in that deal. You know, Lindor's on the market. Everybody knows that. They've had the Clevinger trade rumors. But this is still an Indians team. Two top 20 starting pitchers in Clevinger and Bieber. Carrasco could very well bounce back. I mean, he's only a year removed from being five wins above replacement player as a pitcher. Two top 20 position players in Ramirez and Lindor, and they've got a lot of upside in a lot of different positions, too. And look, this team won 93 games last year. Clevinger missed 2 months. They traded away Bauer. Kluber missed most of the year. Carrasco had leukemia. Lindor was hurt. Ramirez was hurt, then had the broken hamate, missed most of the last 2 months of the season. And they won 93 games. I don't think this year's team on paper is worse than last year's at all. And the win total drops by 7 wins. I think that's a little bit of an overreaction to a lot of the negative press about this team this offseason.
Could not agree anymore. I mean, I think you're spot on with all of that. 86 seems like a really, really low number. We'll have an opportunity to talk some baseball maybe a little bit next month as well, because I know you're on your way out to Vegas next month also, where you'll be getting into your Major League Baseball betting guide for the 2020 season. So we'll have an opportunity to talk about that at a later time. But we'll finish up by talking some college basketball. There's a matchup in the Big Ten tonight that I think a lot of people are really hearing an explanation on. Iowa is favored by 4.5 over a 19th-ranked Michigan Wolverine squad. So why is it that Michigan, who's nationally ranked, is actually getting 4.5 points against Iowa?
Well, and this is why it's so important. You know, a lot of people are going to start betting college basketball now because college football is over, because we've only got 3 NFL games left to go. And, you know, people are going to look at that and kind of look at it the same way you did and say, how can this ranked team be getting, and in fact, this line's up to -5.5 now, how can this ranked team be getting 5.5 points here? And the reality of it is that Michigan's kind of relying on its early season reputation. They beat Iowa State, North Carolina, and Gonzaga in 3 consecutive games down in the battle for Atlantis in the Bahamas. Since then, this team is only 4-5. They've lost it by double digits to Louisville, lost to Illinois, lost at home to Oregon in overtime, got blown out by Michigan State on January 5th, lost this past Sunday to Minnesota. This is just not the same team that it was early on in the year. Teams have adjusted to what first-year head coach Juwan Howard is doing, and Michigan hasn't made enough adjustments. And also, too, the Big Ten this year, massive home-road dichotomy. Home teams playing very, very well, covering a lot of spreads. Road teams not playing particularly well. That's kind of factored into this line and into this line movement as well, where Iowa at home in a conference where teams aren't winning big road games, I think people just generally feel more comfortable with the Iowa team that's been a little bit more consistent of late and also hosting this game in Iowa City.
Great, great stuff. Adam, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for stopping by. Have a great weekend, and we'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Stay warm, guys.
You do the same, Adam. That's Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Make sure you check out Adam's radio shows at BangTheBook.com. He does a daily show there, and he's got great stuff every single day. There's just some fantastic information even if you're not getting into the handicapping side of things, you just want some good, solid data before you take a look at a game, head over to bangthebook.com. They've got some great stuff over there. All right, let's step aside and let's take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.